Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington on this live broadcast from Studio 14. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan this Monday, April 17, 2023. Residents of the Sudanese capital, Khartoum, are stuck in their houses amid heavy gunfire.
We keep in touch with family via text, via very short phone calls just to check in on each other. But alhamdulillah, we're fine.
And Sudanese doctors' union say 97 civilians were killed in crossfire.
To protect civilian populations and also to facilitate the work of humanitarian organizations.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres condemned the violence in Sudan and called for those who can influence the fighting sides to work to bring peace.
I strongly condemn the outbreak of fighting that is taking place in Sudan and appeal to the leaders of the Sudanese armed forces and the rapid support forces to immediately cease hostilities, restore calm, and begin a dialogue to resolve the crisis. The situation has already led to horrendous loss of life, including many civilians. Any further escalation could be devastating for the country and the region. I urge all those with influence over the situation to use it in the cause of peace, to support efforts to end the violence, restore order, and return to the path of transition. The humanitarian situation in Sudan was already precarious and is now catastrophic. I condemn the deaths and injuries to civilians and humanitarian workers and the targeting and looting of premises. I remind all parties of the need to respect international law, including ensuring the safety and security of all United Nations and associated personnel and humanitarian aid workers. I have spoken during the weekend with the two Sudanese leaders, and I am actively engaging with the AU, the Arab League, and leaders across the region. And I reaffirm that the United Nations stands with the people of Sudan at this very difficult time, with full support for their efforts to restore the democratic transition and build a peaceful, secure future.
Sudan's military and the Rapid Support Forces paramilitary have battled for control of key sites in Khartoum and other cities for 3 days. General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan leads the Sudan Armed Forces, and General Hamdan Dagalo, known as Hemiti, commands the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces. Earlier today, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken and U.K. Foreign Secretary James Cleverly called for a ceasefire in Sudan.
We have been consulting very closely on the situation in Sudan. We've also been in close touch with partners in the Arab world, in Africa, in international organizations. There is a shared deep concern about the fighting, the violence that's going on in Sudan, the threat that poses to civilians, that it poses to the Sudanese nation, and potentially poses even to the region. There's also a very strongly shared view about the need for Generals Burhan and Hemeti to ensure the protection of civilians and non-combatants, as well as people from third countries, including our personnel who are located in Sudan, and also a strongly held view, again, across all of our partners on the need for an immediate ceasefire and a return to talks, talks that were very promising in putting Sudan on the path to a full transition to civilian-led government.
The two top diplomats discussed Sudan on the sidelines of a meeting in Tokyo of foreign ministers from the G7 group of leading democracies. Cleverly joined Blinken in condemning the fighting.
The UK has been in contact with our friends in the Arab region. We'll continue to do so. But I echo the points that have been made already by Secretary Blinken, that we call upon an immediate cessation of violence, a return to the talks which seem to be heading in the direction of civilian government. And of course, that is the ultimate desired outcome. And we will continue working both with our close friends in the United States of America and our friends in Africa and the wider Arab world to bring about that move towards peace and a civilian democracy.
Both say they are in close contact with their diplomatic staff in Sudan and are working to ensure the safety of nationals from their countries. Both governments recommended against traveling to Sudan. Some residents of the Sudanese capital, Khartoum, have been locked up in their houses for 3 days due to heavy fighting between Sudan Armed Forces and the paramilitary group Rapid Support Forces. One resident who spoke to Reuters described the situation as desperate.
We're fine. We're safe. The power has been out. That was something. You know, it's like I don't even know what it is anymore. Is it a rocket-propelled grenade? Is that a military strike? I don't even know. But we're good. We keep in touch with family via text, via very short phone calls just to check in on each other. But alhamdulillah, we're fine. Yesterday, we learned that a co-worker was killed. Albert Augustine, an Indian citizen, was killed. We worked in the same place. Again, since the fighting started, the Islamists have been giddy with excitement. They've been crowing all over the place. So my fear, my only fear, is that they come to back to power on the back of whoever wins this idiocy. This ridiculous battle that has civilians caught in the middle, and we have nothing to do with this. I have no sides when it comes to this, because we've seen bloodshed from both sides. So in the middle, we're just caught in the middle, and I don't have a preference. I don't need. I, you know, it's like just. This is our new normal now.
That's a resident of Khartoum speaking to Reuters amid heavy gunfire in the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. A third day of fighting between Sudan's military and the paramilitary rapid support forces raged in Monday in the capital, with both sides claiming control of strategic sites. A doctors' union says nearly 100 people have been killed in the clashes as calls for ceasefire are growing. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
The sounds of gunfire echoed across the Sudanese capital, Khartoum, and other towns Monday afternoon. The military headquarters, Khartoum International Airport, and areas around the presidential palace are the current main battlefields between the military and the rapid support forces. The shooting affected the power supply and water system in the capital, making life more difficult for those trapped indoors by the fighting and people wounded in the clashes. In the Kalakla neighborhood south of Khartoum, the situation seems to be relatively calm, and people venture out to get basic necessities. Wissal Muhammad, a mother of three, says this is the first time in 3 days she's coming out to get food for her children. She says the situation is difficult and we are stranded. There is no electricity and power, and we cannot be mobile if there is an emergency. We are approaching the festivity time and people are just indoors. The fighting started on Saturday morning, and Sudanese doctors say nearly 100 people have been killed and several others injured, including civilians, during the past 3 days. Hamid Babikir sells vegetables along the Jebel Awliya highway south of Khartoum. He told VOA that he is unable to order more stock from the central market due to the tense situation. He says roads are blocked and we cannot risk going out to get vegetables. What I am selling today is a leftover from yesterday. Everybody keeps on complaining of the tense situation and increase in prices because of a lack of fuel. Al-Mois Hassan is a grocer in the Abu Adam neighborhood south of Khartoum. He says he is worried about robbery and has only partially opened his shop as a protection. He called on the warring parties to put the interests of the country and civilians as the first priority. He says the fighting has affected all the shops, not only mine. I'm not afraid of anything rather than losing lives. The two who are fighting are all Sudanese and are only following orders. We hope that God will change their hearts. The military said this afternoon that they had restored control over the state-run TV and radio, which was taken over by the RSF yesterday. The East African Regional Bloc, IGAD, has delegated the presidents of South Sudan, Kenya, and Djibouti to talk to the Sudanese warring parties in an effort to halt the fighting. Michael Atit for VOA News, Khartoum.
Still in Khartoum, Sudanese Association of Doctors say four doctors were killed in crossfire during the fight between Sudan Armed Forces and the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces. For updates on the situation in Khartoum, I reached out to our reporter Michael Atit this past hour for the latest development on the ground.
The fighting is still continuing for the past 3 days today. And as per this afternoon, the main battlefield for the ongoing conflict is around the presidential palace as well as the military headquarters, in addition to the Khartoum International Airport. Even though there are some isolated incidents happening like in Merawi in the north, far north, and also in Omdurman this side, but per the southern part of the Khartoum, life seems to be relative and people are just scared inside. That is the situation, the main situation of today.
What are you hearing from the two sides who are fighting each other?
The two sides keep on claiming the control of these three areas I've mentioned. The Sudan military announced this afternoon that they have reclaimed control over the state-owned TV and radio. Even though if you tune to radio now or you tune to TV, it is not working, but they have reclaimed the control over it, which was being taken over by the RSF since yesterday morning. The RSF also claims they are controlling part of the, Sudan military headquarters in Khartoum and some part of the airports, including the airport base in Merawi. So these claim and counterclaims keep on, issuing statements and the citizens keep on watching, what is the outcome of this? How is this fight going to continue? For how long? And as yet, life seems to be stranded for them. All roads are blocked and they can't access services. And this afternoon, we also heard a statement from the Sudanese doctors saying at least four medical doctors have been killed, and some health facilities within Khartoum, including the main Khartoum teaching hospital, has also been hit. And, which cripple service also in that hospital. So as I speak, there are quite numbers of hospitals within the Khartoum have been shut down and service has been suspended in that.
That's my colleague Michael Atit speaking to me from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. South Sudan government is concerned about fighting in Sudan, but remains neutral to the situation. The country's acting foreign minister told VOA his government stands with the people of Sudan and is committed as a grantor of the Sudan Peace Agreement and members of the regional body eager to work with all parties in Sudan to restore peace and stability to the country, absence of which directly harms South Sudan and the region.
It is within our constitution and the African Union Constitutive Act that we should not really discuss the internal affairs of the member states. However, South Sudan and neighboring countries are very concerned about the current situation in the Republic of Sudan. I have been in contact with my counterpart, Ali Sadiq, the acting foreign minister of Sudan, just to sound out the situation in Khartoum. And we in South Sudan, we have issued a statement 2 days ago. First, giving a solidarity with the people of Sudan on the current situation that is happening in Khartoum and other towns. We also call on the ceasefire and immediate cessation of hostilities and return to the table of talk. We equally also asked access to those who are injured or wounded and humanitarian access across Khartoum and other places. We have done this in the spirit of IGAD, as a member state of IGAD, but also as members of the African Union.
Yes,
and South Sudan is very much concerned on the situation in Sudan.
Yes, but your role goes beyond that, Honorable Minister. South Sudan has been a guarantor of peace processes in Sudan. What role do you have here to get the parties to cease hostilities, to restore peace in Sudan? And what are you doing about it?
Well, before the fight on the 15th, His Excellency the President Salva Kiir Mayardit had several telephone calls with President Burhan and the Deputy President Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo to restrain, not to spark up the fight. And soon after the fight on the 15th, at 9 o'clock in the morning, His Excellency the President also took the same leverage of being a guarantor of the peace agreement in Sudan by reaching out to the two leaders and also to other political forces and to members who are members of the Juba peace agreement. His Excellency the President continued to call even yesterday President Burhan to cease fire and to stop the hostility in Sudan in general.
It's interesting that he's been calling Burhan, but not Hemeti as well, because some people say Juba is not clear on which side to take in this fight that's going on in Sudan. You have people in your government who are closely aligned with Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo. You have also people who are closely working with the military. What do you have to say about that? Where does Juba stand?
Well, well, that's not correct. Juba stand with the Sudanese people. Juba stand with the peace agreement. His Excellency the President have called a number of times Burhan, and a number of times have called also Dagalo. You will understand in a situation of war, if a person cannot pick telephone, it is because of the current situation. Of course, you may get them at the operation room. And you know, when you are at the operation room, in a military term, it is sometimes very, very complicated for you to be able to access and to have telephone. On the issue of people who are supporting each side, this is a total, absolutely not true. We are not supporting any side. We are mediators. We are neutral on the situation. We are with the people of Sudan.
And beside social ties, we know Sudan and South Sudan have social ties. You have families across the border. You have friends and relatives in Sudan. And insecurity in Sudan could jeopardize the situation in South Sudan, especially the lifeline of South Sudan, which is the oil, the lifeline of the economy. Is that a concern for you? Is that something you worried about, that fighting in Sudan could disrupt the flow of oil?
First and foremost, our president, President Salva, and the entire leadership of the South is very concerned about the total welfare of the Sudanese people. We were one people some years ago. So Sudan and South Sudan were one country. We have social ties, we have also economic ties, we have also cultural and many aspects. We have also families across Sudan. We have quite a number of South Sudanese students across universities and higher education in Sudan. We have those who have gone to sought medical treatment. We have economic interests, our oil pipeline pass through the Sudanese territory to Port Sudan. But the most important issue is really having a Sudanese peace. Peace in Sudan is peace in South Sudan. Instability in Sudan, it endangers a lot of lives of people, but also affect the spillover to South Sudan and the neighboring countries.
That's South Sudan's acting foreign minister, Deng Dao Deng, speaking with VOA's Nabil Biagio this morning from Juba. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, more foreigners are stuck in the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. Find out more after the break.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
And I'll repeat that number. If you are in Khartoum and you would like to communicate with us, our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. A resident of Khartoum says gunfire and heavy shelling could still be heard for the third day as Sudan Armed Forces and paramilitary rapid support forces continue to fight in the capital and other parts of Sudan. Malik Rajab says it is very hard to get groceries and other daily necessities as shops remain closed. He says a brief ceasefire mediated by the United Nations is not being honored by the warring parties as clashes continue nonstop.
The third day is not in any way different from the other days. We woke up to heavy gunfire. And the planes have been flying all over with the anti-plane guns trying to take them down. So it's still the same thing. It hasn't come down in any way. It just stopped for a few minutes, like 30 minutes now. And it has not changed that much.
And we hear that since yesterday they have this ceasefire around iftar time, I think, when Muslims break their fast. So are they respecting that or fighting is just going on and on?
It started yesterday when they were saying there was the ceasefire from 4 to 6. And it's not guaranteed because yesterday it is intensified around the same time. I went out, I fell for it, and I went out to find some groceries on the shop. And, I was caught mid-fire, personally, at around 5:30. So, I don't know, maybe in other neighborhoods, but in our neighborhood, it's we don't have a ceasefire around that time because it's 5:15 in my neighborhood, and there's still gunfire.
How is daily life like? Are people walking in the streets? Are people able to access the markets, shops? How is life?
Well, it's really hard given the situations. The streets are all full of military armored vehicles, the soldiers, and so it's there is no movement at all, limited movement. Maybe late in the night when it goes down a bit, the shops open, the people walking around are selling stuff, deliveries. But you have to know someone to get something. There is contacts moving around in WhatsApp groups, so you make a call and they deliver to your home place. But it's been hard to get daily supplies, water. There is a power cut. There is no water. The internet is on and off. So it's a bit crazy out here.
And what are people saying? Do they expect this situation to go on and on, or do they expect it to end soon?
Well, we really hope. It's hard to believe there is a lot of information out there. Some are saying it's going to come down anytime soon. Some are saying it's not stopping anytime soon. There is a lot of conspiracies going around. Like they say, Syria is under this segment. It's under the Hemeti. They say Amarat is under Burhan. They say places that have the RSS, like this, Southern Khartoum, Sinia, Madden Street. They say it's safe and life is sort of back to normal. But we can't confirm this because I personally have not been there. It's just information going around in our subgroups.
That's Malik Rajab, a resident of East Africa. He was speaking with my colleague Nabil Biagio from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Alexis de Tocqueville, the 19th century French diplomat, political philosopher, and historian, once said that media is how we maintain civilization, noted USAID Administrator Samantha Power recently. That is high praise, she said, and speaks to the indispensability of the media. And she stressed that independent media is facing existential challenges at the moment. One of them is a direct onslaught from autocrats.
Autocrats target independent media because information empowers us. This is not, as they say, a bug. This is a design feature of repressive rule. And whether people are resisting an invasion, whether they are campaigning to replace corrupt leaders with reformers, taking on climate change, collective action really cannot begin without a collective understanding of the challenges and opportunities in front of us.
What's noteworthy and maybe gets a little bit less attention, said Administrator Power, is that for all of the declining indicators among human rights and civil liberties tracked by the research group Freedom House, freedom of the media and freedom of expression have declined the most.
In the past 17 years, the number of countries that have a score of 0 out of 4 on the media freedom indicator has more than doubled from 14 to 33. And again, that aligns with the 17 straight years of freedom in decline. Powerful people who seek to control the narrative spread inaccurate information to drown out the truth. They silence journalists.
The second existential challenge to independent media is a financial health crisis resulting from a rapidly transforming media environment. The United States is partnering with fellow democracies to try to recognize these two distinct challenges and come up with tools to address them, said Samantha Power. For one, USAID is partnering with Microsoft, Internews, and companies and organizations to launch a public-private partnership to help small media companies transition to an online subscription basis to help make these outlets viable, even profitable. Then there are corrupt and repressive actors who use protracted lawsuits to drive small, underfunded, independent media outlets out of business. To help such outlets defend themselves and continue publishing even while under attack, USAID and its partners have founded Reporters Shield, a pooled public insurance fund intended to defend reporters and NGOs from legal threats meant to silence criticism. I want to use this occasion as a call to action for anyone who finds this intriguing, said Administrator Power, and would like you to get involved or to join.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
And that's all we prepared for you this Monday when I leave you with Jamnazi Africa and the song Rizigi. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. Don't forget to visit voafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you miss this program, go to www.voafrica.com/South Sudan. On behalf of our producer, Nabil Biagio, and engineer, Alfredo Santo, we wish you a good evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.